Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Luciano. Mike, what's up, man? How you doing?
I can't complain too much. I'm feeling pretty good because a little quick programming note before we start. We will not have a show next week, partially because I will be on a Alaskan cruise.
Ooh.
So I have not taken PTO in a while. I was actually... My manager is actually at one point said, like, please take time off. Like, I'm begging you, please take PTO. So because of that, I begrudgingly have to stop writing Jets content, and I'll end up halfway across the world on an Alaskan cruise with the family. So,
well, while you're in Alaska. About
that, but before we do that, we have one last big Jet Press show of pretty much just off season stuff. Cause then training camp's going to come around. We can talk about training camp and the preseason. So we'll get into some rumors. We'll get into some analysis of the entire division as a whole. We'll get into some bold predictions to leave you with before the little 1 week hiatus. But before all of that, you can find us on YouTube. You could like and subscribe. That really helps the show. And you can download us on Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. For the audio guys, we are on all those sites. That's where you could listen and download and rate 5 stars. That really helps. Never mind all that, Justin, because we got a pretty good show for you, I guess. If I don't mind saying so myself.
I hope so. I hope so.
We are going back on the Davante Adams train. Really, Davante Adams, after it looks like there's no way to get him? Well, according to Davante himself on Kay Adams' show, it's a pretty good daytime offering, I got to say. Certainly better than what's on ESPN or FS1 in that same time slot.
Sure.
If you've allowed me to editorialize a bit, Davante Adams says Aaron Rodgers is still in his ear, still recruiting to the Jets. Davante tried to shoot it down as best he could. He said, I'm still a Raider. Rodgers has to realize that I'm still a Raider. And even though I don't think they're going to be particularly good this year, I don't think the Raiders are in a spot where they're in like blow it up mode if they're bad. Because I think they have a pretty okay roster, like top to bottom. I just think they need a long-term quarterback and a running back. But I like... Their defense is better now. Adams, obviously, is a receiver. I don't think they're in blow-it-up mode, which makes it harder to get him. But we have to assume, or not assume, we could at least entertain the possibility of a calamity happening, because calamities happen all the time with this team last year. Nobody thought that was happening, and it happened. Let's just say something happens. Maybe Antonio Pierce, who was hired probably because the players loved him after Josh McDaniels came in, let's just say that he runs a little thin. Let's just say part of the appeal of Antonio Pierce maybe would have been that he's not Josh McDaniels, which is an upgrade, because Josh McDaniels is a terrible coach. I don't know how he got another job. How he got 3 jobs, technically, because of the Colts one, too, that he backed out of. So let's say that wears off. Let's say the Raiders are terrible. Let's say Adams is alienated. Let's say he demands, I want out, like Brandon Ayuk in San Francisco, I want out. It might happen. It might happen. And I don't think that it'll happen. But if it does, I think the Jets are as well equipped to get him as anybody, because they have shown with how they've handled their picks in the last couple of years and how they almost got another wide receiver. They're going in on receiver. They're trying to get Rodgers as many weapons as possible. They realized in 2023 that Alan Lazard was not as good as they thought he was, and that does not satisfy the mission statement. to get more receivers and get weapons for Aaron Rodgers. Davante Adams, even in a veteran compromised state, like he's not going to be 1,500 yards every single year, I don't think. Even in that state, pretty damn good receiver. And if there's a chance, even just a chance, I know that it would be an extensive amount of draft capital that you'd have to give up. But think about Mike Williams as a number three wide receiver. Think about Malachi Corley as a number four wide receiver. It's unlikely, but you know if the Raiders start out 1-4 and the Jets are 5-1, you know Rodgers is going to be sending Davante Adams stuff like, hey, come to New York, come to New York. And Adams has asked out of situations that were better than that before. He asked out of Green Bay. That was a great situation. Still asked out. I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, and he asked out of Green Bay because he kind of wanted to go play with a quarterback that he liked, which was Derek Carr. Possibly this is a scenario here where he asks out of Vegas because he wants to go play with a quarterback that he likes, and that's Aaron Rodgers. Now, like you said, Mike, it's very unlikely. I'm not at all surprised that Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams are still having, you know, quiet behind-the-scenes discussions about this. I'm sure it's a situation where Rodgers is like, hey, man, wouldn't it be great if you came to New York? Wouldn't it be awesome if you played in the Jets? I'm not surprised at all that those conversations are going on. In fact, I would be shocked if they weren't going on. But like you said, Mike, it's a pipe dream at this stage. I feel like there was a time last year where, I don't want to say it felt inevitable, but it felt almost likely that the Jets were going to be making a really strong push and maybe even land Davante Adams. Of course, that was before Josh McDaniels was fired. That was when it was, for lack of a better term, a shit show in Vegas. And it was a mess. It was a complete mess. And it was pretty clear that Davante Adams was not happy.
And we're Jets fans calling that a mess.
Correct. And somehow it was much less of a shit show in New York, even without their starting quarterback. So, you know, it seemed almost inevitable at a point last year. But then Josh McDaniels was fired. They bring in Antonio Pierce. He rights the ship. Adams seems a lot happier. And now, I mean, look, credit to the guy because, you know, like I said, he went to Vegas to play with Derek Carr. That was kind of the biggest thing. He wanted to play with his college teammate. Carr's gone, but he's still, you know, pretty committed to being a Raider. Like, it seems that he's there to stick it out, and he's not trying to force his way out because Carr's gone. And even though it's not a great situation, barring a significant turn for the worse, I don't think he's going to be traded. I don't think he's going to try and force his way out. But you said it right, Mike. If the Raiders start the year 1-4, 1-5, whatever, those rumors will start to swirl. They will start to swirl. Aaron Rodgers will be talking to Joe Douglas. He'll be talking to Robert Saleh, saying, hey, call up Las Vegas. Call up the Raiders. See what their interest is in potentially moving Davante Adams. Now, the biggest obstacle there, I think, is not even necessarily the Raiders' interest in trading him. It's finances. Because, like, Davante Adams, and I don't know the exact specific finances here, but I know that they would need to take on a very, very, very large amount of dead cap to move him. He's still under contract through 2026. His cap numbers the next two seasons are over $44 million. Now, they wouldn't be that high for an acquiring team. I believe they'd be around $36 million. If a team traded,
what a deal.
Now, what I imagine would happen, or maybe it'd be like 30 something million. What I imagine would happen is the Jets, if they were to trade for Davante Adams, would have to rework his deal. I don't think he has as much guaranteed money left. So I think both sides would be motivated for that, get his cap number down. That's something they could do. But on the other hand, you have so many guys coming up that you need to worry about extending. Garrett Wilson being one of them, Breece Hall, Sauce Gardner. I mean, Quincy Williams is going to be needing a new contract soon enough. Jermaine Johnson, like there are, Hassan Reddick is probably about to get some sort of a new deal. There, Michael Carter, like there are so many guys that you need to worry about paying. That I'm not saying that it would be bad to trade Davante Adams. I'm just saying there's so many obstacles in a way that could prevent it, both from the Jets side and the Raiders side, that it is. I would declare it a pipe dream. That's what I would call it. I don't think it is realistic. It's not impossible. I think there's a scenario in which it happens. It would just take a significant amount of factors going the way of this trade happening. It would take the Raiders being really bad. It would take, you know, I think Antonio Pierce, like you said, losing his luster, and maybe Davante Adams growing unhappy again. And it would take the Jets feeling that they really either need to make a move for a wide receiver, or hell, they really have a chance of winning the Super Bowl and they want to just get themselves over the top by trading for Davante Adams. I think that's the scenario in which this happens. But the amount of things that need to go right, it's a lot. And that's, I would call it a pipe dream. That's why I would call it a pipe dream.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, the only reason that I think there's a non-zero chance is because Joe Douglas has basically said that he's on like a suicide mission with the Jets. Yeah. Where if I don't win, I'm taking all of you with me. All of you being all these picks and stuff like that. Like, we're burning this to the ground. If we could get a championship out of this, but if not, and I get fired, at least I went for it and you're on your own. Well, I don't work for you anymore, so kind of screw you. And, you know, as the fan in me who is going to be invested beyond Joe Douglas's tenure, like, part of that is upsetting to me, but also I'm like, you know what? This is what people were asking for, I guess. They wanted aggression. They wanted all in. Remember the all in draft thing? I'm like, oh, that was a dumb idea, but this is what they wanted. And if there's even a thought of this app out there, I at least appreciate that Joe Douglas is kind of keeping it percolating out there and that there's at least a thought. Like, I know this will mess up some stuff, but Davante Adams is Davante Adams, and we're trying to win a championship. Like, right. To get a guy who's even considering that, I don't feel like a lot of GMs will. I know that Joe Douglas is being pressed into this because everything's very dire, because he could lose his job if they're really bad this year, but pressure makes diamonds, so he's trying something.
Everything we've seen from Joe Douglas, I know the narrative has been that, like, the Jets are going all in this year. They're sacrificing the future to go all in this year. I haven't really gotten that vibe. I know that they're obviously making a lot of moves to try and compete this year, bringing in guys like Tyron Smith, Mike Williams, but I haven't taken it as like, oh, they're sacrificing the future. I mean, Joe Douglas is still very much planning as if he's going to be here beyond 2024. He wouldn't have drafted Olofoshano in the first round if that was not his plan. Like, I think the moves that Joe Douglas has made even this offseason have been indicative of someone who wants to compete this year but expects to be here or beyond 2024, and he's not sacrificing future years to try and contend this year. And so, you know, I think with related to the Davante Adams situation, I think it's still a possibility. I think it's still an option for them, but I don't think he's going to, you know, sell the house or whatever. I don't think he's going to, you know, see the Jets, say they're like 3-3 going to the deadline or whatever, 4-3, whatever it would be. I don't think he's going to panic and trade for Davante Adams and be like, all right, we need to do this now, because I think he thinks this roster is good enough. Like, and it is. It absolutely is. I don't think that's a a hot take by any means, this roster is good enough to make the playoffs and possibly even compete for a Super Bowl without Davante Adams. So I don't think there's going to be pressure from the Jets side necessarily. I don't know. It's a very interesting situation that we'll have to see unfold. It's a possibility, and we can leave it at that. But it's going to be a scenario that we hear more about if things start to fall in a certain direction. If the Jets receiving room is struggling, if the Raiders are bad, most importantly, and honestly, even more important than that, if Davante Adams is unhappy, then we'll start to hear these rumors swirl up. But you know, if the Raiders start 500 going into the trade deadline, I don't think we're going to hear much about this going into the deadline.
Now, let's move on to a topic that I'm actually very excited for, because I know we talk a lot about the Jets, but we also talk a lot about the AFC East, because that's a third of the Jets' schedule every year, and that's all their big rivals. So I want to take a look at the AFC East and kind of do a little studying our enemy and learning our enemy here as the Jets try to compete for a division title in a division outside the AFC North. This might be the best division in football.
Is it North?
I think the AFC West has a shot at that too, if the Chargers are as good as I think they're going to be, and they have Kansas City, obviously. The North is running away, I think, the best, but this is a deep division, man.
It is. I think it's definitely better than the AFC West, for sure, because you have two teams that are kind of duds in the AFC West, whereas in the East, you really only have one team that – I don't even think the Patriots are a dud in the way that, like, the Broncos are a dud or even the Raiders. Like, I think the Patriots – on paper, are definitely better than the Broncos, probably better than the Raiders.
Well, let's get into talking about the Patriots first, because for the first time in over 20 years, we can talk about them as, without a doubt, they are projected to be the worst team in the division.
Yes.
Without question. And I've prayed for times like this. I'm thrilled for times like this that we can finally discuss the Patriots in this matter and not just say, oh, they're going to go 13-3 every year because of inane bullshit or random Tom Brady devil magic on top of Tom Brady being really good. Like, that ship has sailed. Drake May might be that in the future, which would make me really upset. But
I'm worried.
But I don't know why. Washington, why did you take Jaden? Why? Now, the good news for at least 2024, the good news for that is it looks like May is going to start the year as the backup. And Jacoby Brissett is going to be the starter. Now, Brissett, as he's shown, pretty decent quarterback. And he sliced up the Jets last year. He almost won that Washington game after Sam Howell looked like he was playing JV high school football. Brissett came in and diced him up. So this is a real quarterback that you have to worry about. And this defense is not something you got to shake a stick at. This is a legitimate defense. Gerard Mayo was basically the defensive coordinator last year because Bill Belichick, that was his scheme, and he was calling the plays and all that. I know he had his sons there, but Gerard Mayo was kind of the main, dare I say, coach, for lack of a better word.
Sure. The brains and, behind the operation.
So because of that, this defense is still really good. They're still together. They still have a lot of young talent. Jabril Peppers has really come into his own. Christian Gonzalez, what a hell of a cornerback he was. Another how the hell did the Patriots get him kind of guy? Because he was supposed to be a top 10 lock. Then he goes 17. You're like, why does this keep happening over and over again? But it happened again. Like, this is not a team where you just roll out your regular squad and beat them 31-10. Like, I don't think they'll be amazing. Like, I think they're probably going to be in for another top 10 pick. I think probably a top 5 pick, if we're being honest. Because, again, even if May starts, he's probably going to get, what, 8-9 games in? And then he'll play, and he'll still be a rookie that you got to put up with. But New England, I don't think, is the only team that I don't think is a real threat to win the division, even with that defense.
Yeah, I agree, and I don't think most people would disagree with that take. They're a better team than I think a lot of people are giving them credit for, and I think part of it is also me just being higher on their quarterback room than a lot of others. Like, I think the Drake May is going to be really good. I don't know when we'll see him this year, but I really liked him as a prospect. Like you said, Mike, I am not happy that Washington passed on him with the second overall pick, and especially that he fell to the Patriots. But I also think Jacoby Brissett is pretty solid. And I don't hate their wide receiver room. You know, I'm a big fan of Kendrick Bourne. DeMario Pop Douglas, I think he showed a lot of good things last year. I really like Javon Baker. They got in the fourth round. They got Jalen Polk, too. I think they have some guys in that offense that can make some noise. They're clearly a step below the other guys they're clearly a step below the other teams in that division. But I still think that they can do something this year. I don't think they're going to push for really a playoff spot. It would be very surprising if they made the playoffs, if they made a wild card spot. And I definitely don't think
it surprised the hell out of me. And then that AFC.
Correct. And I don't think they're competing for the division by any means at all, but I think they could surprise some people and win some games this year. I think that they are a tougher out than a lot of people are giving them credit for. But yeah, if we're talking about the AFC East, the Jets are definitely a step below, or not the Jets. I'm used to saying that. The Patriots are definitely a step below the other three teams in the AFC East.
Oh, it feels so good. And then they'll probably end up being above the Jets anyway, because that's just how these things end up going. But it's just not after 20 years, Justin, where yeah. Like there was how many years, even during the Rex years, like those were surprising runs. Like no one thought they would really like win the division that year. And even again, last year, there was some question about, well, how is Rodgers going to fit? And then leg blew up. We all know that. Like for the first time in this is the first time in 20 years where you could say the Jets are probably the favorites to win the division. It feels great.
It's
now, again, it's probably not going to happen because of Jets luck, but
would you say the Jets are favorites? Because I still think a lot of people are like the Bills.
I'd say Jets. I mean, marginally, like, sure. I think the Jets last time I checked were like in plus 180 or 190-ish or something like that. And then the Bills were like 210 and the Dolphins were 230 or something. Right. Like it's a dead even three-horse race.
Yep.
Is your vehicle stopping like it should? Does it squeal or grind when you brake? Don't miss out on summer brake deals at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So moving on to, you want to do Buffalo or Miami first?
Let's do Miami. Let's do Miami first.
Miami. Miami used to be the AFC East team I disliked the least. Buffalo. Now it's firmly Buffalo.
Yeah, I got nothing against the Bills. I have nothing against their fans. I think their fans are pretty cool. Dolphins fans, look, man, your Dolphins fans on Twitter are insane, and they've become one of my least favorite fan bases in the NFL. It's bad.
But like, for some reason, even when like Ryan Fitzpatrick was with the Bills and they had those like horrible uniforms with the navy blue shoulder pad, they had like three different tones of blue in the same uniform. Like Eric Molds, Lee Evans, like even in that time, for some reason, I disliked the Bills more than Miami. Maybe because Chad Pennington went there. And maybe because Miami always had like, you know, Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown and stuff like that. They had some guys that were kind of cool.
And now they got everyone's, you know, favorite good guy, Tyreek Hill.
Oh, yeah, Tyreek Hill. Xavien Howard, who they had up until very recently, who go look at what he got accused of doing. I mean, that was bad. My God, was that bad? It's one of those things where you hear that he does it and you're like, huh? Like, it didn't even compute that a human being could, like, do that. Where you're like, what the? Wow. That's what Xavien Howard did. But moving on, let's get to Miami just as a football team. Now, obviously, the offense is kind of scary, and they've earned the right to be scary. There are a few offenses in the league that genuinely would terrify me more than Miami, mostly because they are scheme-proof, for lack of a better word, in that you could have – Robert Saleh's got a really good defensive scheme, and he's got really good players, but Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle are really fast, so they can't keep up with them, so they just run by you. And you can't scheme your way around that. You can't – you know, crunch guys down on defense. You can't really just outsmart guys to negate that speed. It's always going to be there. They're always going to have a good vertical passing game. And the running game they have, I mean, Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane, wasn't Achane averaging like 9 or 10 yards a carry most of last year?
Yeah, it was insane.
I know he inflated because of that Bronco game, but I mean, he's got tremendous speed. Like, if you were to take the top 10 fastest guys in the league, what's Miami have, like 4 of them?
And then they just added Jalen Wright.
And then you get Mike McDaniel, who not only is he probably a top 5 offensive mind in terms of just like, let me draw plays and get guys open. Yep. Like, how many times do you watch Miami and Tyreek Hill is not only open, but there's not even anybody on the screen. And you're like, it's Tyreek Hill. How is he there? Because of Mike McDaniel. So not only do they have that, but they also have a guy who is uniquely equipped to beat the Jets in that he went against Robert Saleh defensively for all those years. So who knows better how to beat Robert Saleh's scheme than probably him and Kyle Shanahan, yeah, who make up three of the Jets games this year, including their opener on Monday Night Football. So that part is scary. And the defense is better than it was last year. So why is Miami still, in my opinion, the third best team in the division? This is going to be weird because Tua Tagovailoa is not a bad quarterback. Like, there's Tua's a weird, like, gray. He's in that, like, weird Trevor Lawrence-y gray area where people will, like, threaten to slit each other's throats online debating how good or how bad he is. Like, Tua's good. I think he's on the fringe of top 10. But he is – I don't think any quarterback gets more – outside of Brock Purdy – gets more of a schematic personnel boost than Tua. Yes. And I think what their performance in December and January showed is when things aren't clicking and you need Tua to play above himself, as all great quarterbacks eventually need to do, that's where the problems start. When it's cold, he's not as good. When he's thrown off center, not as good. When the pocket gets muddled because he doesn't have like elite arm strength, the accuracy is the selling point. He doesn't have the elite arm strength, not as good. So because of that, the Jets need, if the Jets can find a way to somehow, I know this is much easier said than done, somehow neutralize the McDaniel impact on Tua, for lack of a better word, that'll be the key to helping them leapfrog Miami in the division.
Well, first, as Brian says in chat, this is a great point. Miami probably is the best football team in America because, you know, they got Lionel Messi.
FC Cincinnati just beat him 6-1. Now Messi didn't play in that game, but
okay, well,
they're in the supporter shield race. Go sure, NYCFC, you know, who are
speaking of that
right now. So go NYCFC.
Speaking of U.S. soccer, I believe we might be getting. I think we're supposed to get an announcement about Greg Berhalter within the next like hour or so. It might be while we're live, and if the U.S. men's national team announces that Greg Berhalter is fired during the stream, I will be very excited. And
he's honestly a fine. Yeah, he was good in MLS.
Don't you dare. He was bad. We're not going to talk about this now.
He won MLS, didn't he, with the Crew?
This man got fired from, a second division Swedish side. He's not good. He sucks. He's bad.
Then why were the Crew winning every single year with him?
Name one signature win that Greg Berhalter has had as U.S. men's national team head coach. You can't. He's had two good results, and they were draws against Brazil and England, which were matched by Costa Rica and Slovenia within the last 3 weeks.
Let's just go hire another great U.S. national team manager like
Bring in Jurgen Klopp. That's all right. Anyway,
Jurgen Klopp.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, all right. We're getting off the rails now. We're not talking wrong football. Let's talk about
that. That'd be like saying, like, hey, you know, I'm really struggling with my quarterbacks right now. We'll just get prime Peyton Manning.
He's out there. He's out there, man.
Why would he take this job? This is a blinky dink crappy job.
Ryan, you're right. This is your fault. Look what you've done. Don't you I will take zero Greg Berhalter defense. That is criminal as an American. Right.
I'm sure there's eight better options out there that the U.S. chose not to hire for some reason.
There are infinite better options out. Anyway, all right. We're wrong football. I have another rant. I want to talk about Tua. Let's reel it back in. Let's talk about the Dolphins. Let's talk about Tua because I have a little, not a rant that I don't want to go on, but a little spiel. I think people misuse the terms game manager and system quarterback. I think that they are misused. I think that if you want to talk about Tua Tagovailoa, I would say he's probably both of those things. But a lot of people think that him and Brock Purdy have like the same gig and they do the same stuff. Say what you want about Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy is the definition of a system quarterback. That man is not a game manager. Brock Purdy is not a game manager.
Garoppolo was a system, as has been proven, system quarterback.
Garoppolo was both. Garoppolo did both.
You know how much shit I took for years saying that? For years?
And I am a Brock Purdy, I don't want to say a hater, right? But I'm not, I would not call myself a Brock Purdy defender. You know, I'm not anyone that's putting him in top 10 conversations, and I work close there. But he is a significant step up from Jimmy Garoppolo. And the reason he is because he's able to play make. He's able to create outside of the system. Now, it's weird because the stuff that a Shanahan system normally requires from a good quarterback is, you know, stuff like anticipation, accuracy, pre-snap reads. Brock Purdy's not particularly great at that stuff. That's not even what his strengths are as a quarterback. That is what Tua's strengths are. But the reason that I can't put Tua in that top 10 conversation. I mean, you can, if you want to, like, put him in top 10 conversation.
If you want to be wrong, you can do that. But yeah,
specifically
sure.
specifically with McDaniel is because we've never seen the ability for him to create outside of the system and to consistently do that. When things go wrong, he cannot succeed. He just cannot create outside of the system. Now, in that system, he is really freaking good. And you can't just put anybody else in that McDaniel scheme and have them be good. If you put Brock Purdy on the Dolphins, they stink. They're not nearly as good as they are now. Hell, if you put this is going to be
didn't a they wild put Brissett thing. In, or was that before McDaniel got hired when Brissett was the backup? That was Bridgewater, Skylar Thompson.
Bridgewater, Skylar Thompson. Yeah. They were significantly worse in the same scheme. And this is going to be a crazy take. You put Patrick Mahomes in that system. I don't think he's significantly better than what we're seeing from Tua. It would be really dumb.
Okay, there's where you lose me.
Listen to me. I think it'd be really dumb to put Patrick Mahomes in that system because he is significantly better at many things than Tua. But just what the system asks Tua to do, he is one of the best you're going to find at that system. Now, as we've seen, if you are just relying on that scheme and just relying on that system to beat the guys in front of you, there are going to be limitations. And we've seen that every December with the Dolphins. It is a thing that has frequently followed Tua throughout his career, and it's now been a thing for multiple years under McDaniel. You need a quarterback that can do stuff beyond that system when things don't go wrong. When the X's and O's aren't working, you need a guy that can create off schedule. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes is one of the best in the NFL at doing that, probably the best in the NFL at doing that, amongst many other things. Patrick Mahomes is an immensely more talented quarterback than Tua Tagovailoa. That is not the argument I'm making. I'm talking specifically in the system. I don't think Patrick Mahomes, the things that system asks from a quarterback, is significantly better than Tua at those specific things. I think Tua, as far as accuracy and anticipation is concerned, top three in the league. But obviously, you need more to be a quarterback. And so all of that is to say that while Tua is a very good quarterback, he is a very good quarterback, and he is absolutely maximized in Miami's scheme and what they ask him to do, he excels at. There's limitations with him, and those limitations tend to pop up when things get tough. And that's why, yeah, I'm with you, Mike, and I can't say that I'm like a believer in the Dolphins winning the AFC East or making a deep playoff run because of those reasons. I also don't think their defense is necessarily going to be better like they should be, but also you got to account for guys like Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb are both coming off major injuries. I don't even think it's a guarantee that either are going to be ready for week one. I know Chubb suffered that ACL injury in like January or very end of December. Phillips, of course, had the Achilles, I believe, against the Jets. So there's no guarantee that either of them are going to be ready. I do think that Kendall Fuller will be an improvement over Xavier Howard, who has quietly been pretty bad. They did bring in Jordan Poyer. They have Marcus May. Both of those guys have had some decent injury issues the last few years, too. So I think there's a lot of question marks about that Miami defense, although I do like Calais Campbell coming in. I think that Zach Sealer is an underrated player, too. But I have some question marks still about the defense, and I don't think they're automatically just going to be good this year, right? Jalen Ramsey's still really good. Amadon says he's not as dumb. He's still very, very good. But I have some questions about the Miami team, and I think I would comfortably put them as the third best team in the AFC East because of that. But again, all that's to say that they're going to dominate some teams. They're going to put up 50 points on a team, probably in the regular season. They're probably going to do that because when everything is firing on all cylinders and when they're clicking on offense, it is impossible to stop. Genuinely impossible to stop them. But yeah, that's my rant about Tua. That's my spiel about him. And I don't know that I always find it dumb when people try and make it seem like Tua and Brock Purdy are being asked to do the same thing and doing the same thing because they're totally not. Like, I would almost put, like, I don't know, because Kirk Cousins is another guy like that who's, like, a system quarterback, right? But so, like,
Kirk Cousins was successful in a bunch of systems for a very long time.
In Minnesota, I would say that Kirk Cousins was a system quarterback in Minnesota. To his credit,
but he kept bouncing between different coordinators and schemes and styles in Minnesota.
To his credit, I think that he's tried to evolve. The issue is, obviously, he's just not the most mobile guy, so it's harder for him to play make. But I would definitely classify Kirk Cousins as like us. I think he's good. I think Kirk is very good. I think Kirk is absolutely a good quarterback. But and again, I think people like system quarterback doesn't mean you're bad. Like you could be a bad system quarterback. That's Jimmy Garoppolo. That's a bad system quarterback.
System quarterback to me implies that there's a system you're married to. Like Garoppolo could not exist is a system quarterback because we have not seen him succeed outside of Kyle Shanahan. We've seen guys like Kirk Cousins or even Jared Goff. But Goff has exceeded now with McVay and with Ben Johnson. I think that alleviates the concerns.
I guess it's semantics because, like, we could both agree that Jared Goff would not be nearly as good as he was last year if you put him in 95% of our schemes, right? But that's a credit to Ben Johnson. That's the credit to the work he did. You could say the same thing about Baker Mayfield, what he did last year in Tampa with Dave Canales. I don't think Baker would be nearly as good as he you know was last year with most other schemes. So, like, it depends. I don't think my definition of system quarterback is you are married to one scheme. I think it's when your numbers are clearly propped up by the system you're playing. That's kind of my definition.
Well, I mean, that could be how that's pretty much every guy with a good offensive coordinator in the league then.
Sure. You can argue
Patrick Mahomes then.
But I think it's in my how I look at it is I think this player would be a significant step down in most other schemes. That's kind of how I view it. Like, so I think Kirk, if you put Kirk on a lot of other, like, I don't know how he's going to fare in Atlanta. I really don't. I think if you put him on a lot of other teams.
They're basically going to run McVay's offense because it's Zach Robinson, so.
Sure, and I like Zach Robinson as a coach as well, so hopefully he'll get some good stuff out of him. But I don't think, Jared Goff, you put Jared Goff on, I don't know, what was a mid-team last year? You put him on, like, the Chargers, I think he's going to be bad. He's not going to be good. I would say that. I don't think Jared Goff would be good on the Chargers. Whereas if you put like Justin Herbert in LA or Detroit, dude, now we're cooking. You know, that's my take on what a system quarterback is. It's all semantics at the end of the day. But anyway, my point
Let's
was
get away from semantics and back to analysis with Buffalo because sure. Buffalo took a step back because for the last 3 years, the class of the AFC, outside of honestly the 1 year, I'm willing to count Cincinnati's probably the fourth team in the AFC over the last couple years. Now, I know they had the crazy run, but to me, the class of that conference was always Kansas City, Baltimore, and Buffalo. And I feel like if you looked at everybody's Super Bowl predictions, pretty much everyone had some variation of either Kansas City, Baltimore, or Buffalo. They've taken a step back to build because Stephon Diggs is gone. Gabriel Davis is gone. A lot of their defensive players are gone or back in like reduced roles. A lot of people would say that the window kind of closed, that they had their window. Josh Allen in his prime right before the contract got like too crazy and they had to get rid of guys like Diggs and they blew it. And to a degree, they kind of blew it. They blew their best chance at winning a Super Bowl with as currently constructed with Josh Allen, Sean McDermott, this whole sort of power structure. But this is still a really good team. Like when you have Allen just in general, you're going to be good. Just on a base level, you're going to have some success because he's just that flipping good. I know the Jets give him some problems. I don't know why. I think for some reason, like because maybe they try to limit the big plays, he gets kind of antsy and he'll try to make a throw that he shouldn't. That's just my looking from however far away analysis of it. But you still got Allen. You still got a pretty good offensive line. You still got a defense that is, I think, has enough player like Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard. I think is one of the best linebacker combinations in all of football. I think that I really liked how they drafted. I like Cole Bishop. I like Dwayne Carter. They're both going to be good. And Oliver's still really good. Like they have, and then obviously Russo and Epinesa on the outside. Like they got guys. This is still a team you got to worry about. But I think more than it has been in other years, I know every year that the quarterback is obviously the main driving force, but more so than even any other years, this is all going to depend on Allen specifically. Because if he is not what he was at the end of last year, because the first year he was not that good, the first half, excuse me, of last year, he was not as good as he normally is. If he's not second half good, I think it'll be tough for Buffalo to win the division. But if he is, I mean, why can't they win a Super Bowl? Because when Josh Allen's clicking, that is a guy who he'll play no matter what system you put him in because he's just so big and so strong and so athletic. Mm-hmm. Like you still got to worry about the Bills, even in this compromised state.
Yeah, I think objectively speaking, this Bills team is worse than they were last year. But like you said, Mike, they're still really good. And I don't think that their defense is going to take a significant step back. You ran through a lot of that. I think Matt Milano's for Auburn Hard's one of the best linebacker duos in the league. Some people have mentioned their cornerback room, and I'm like, I think their corners are really good. Like Teron Johnson might be the best nickel corner in the NFL. And Rasul Douglas was really, really good last year. Like, really good. I have way better than I think a lot of people obviously would have expected, and two, realize he was. So he was one of the better cornerbacks in football last season. And obviously their front four is still very, very talented. So I don't really have any concerns about their defense. I think they'll be able to replace their safeties as well. I also really like Cole Bishop. We had talked about him as a potential target for the Jets on day two of the draft. I remember going into the draft. So I don't really have concerns about their defense. Their offense, like you said, it's all predicated around Josh Allen. I do think James Cook is good, and I thought he had a solid season last year, and I think he's a solid
first
running
first time in pretty much Allen's entire career they really had like a running game to go with. Yep. That wasn't just him.
And I'm a big Ty Johnson fan. He's back right now. I think he's competing for that RB2 job. He played very well when given the opportunity in Buffalo. Hell, he played very well when given the opportunity in New York, but unfortunately that didn't matter. So I think that their running backs are fine. The big concern is just their wide receiver room. Like, that's, if you have any issue with this Bills team, it's their wide receiver room. I hate their wide receivers. Just on paper, I like Curtis Samuel. I think Curtis Samuel is a very solid NFL wide receiver, rock solid. Honestly, on a good team, really good wide receiver three.
We wanted him on the Jets.
Yeah, I think he is a very, very good player, a rock solid player. He's currently their number one, and that is a problem.
Or maybe Keon Coleman will be their one.
Right, they're hoping for Keon Coleman to be a really important part of that offense this year, and I just did not like Keon Coleman going to the draft. I really had some concerns about him as a prospect. It just comes down to, if you're a contested catch guy who struggled to make contested catches and struggled to separate, I will have concerns about you going into the NFL. And so I'm very down and very low on Keon Coleman. They got guys like Marquez Valdes-Scantling in there, Chase Claypool. I mean, I don't know what Khalil Shakir is going to be. Maybe he could develop into a starting caliber wide receiver. He's not there at this point. So obviously, you still have Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox, which might be the best tight end duo in the NFL. I'm not sure you could find a better one than that. It's two very
solid. Andrews and Isaiah Likely.
Knox is better than Lively. We haven't seen Lively be able to be a starter for an entire season when he's gotten a chance.
I just thought he was crazy good the last half of last year.
He was. And it helps that the Ravens, he used him in a similar way to Mark Andrews and targeted him a lot. And Dawson Knox has had his own issues in the past. Like, he's had drop concerns too, but yeah, either way, whether it's one, two, whatever, it doesn't matter. Kincaid is very good, and I think he's only going to get even better. The Jets apparently wanted Kincaid 2 years ago. If you go back to the 2023 draft, that was apparently a thing. So they're going to have to take on a lot of responsibility with the receivers being bad. But yeah, it ultimately comes down to how far can Josh Allen just put this team on his back. It kind of reminds me of some of those Aaron Rodgers teams where he just had nothing. Like his last year in Green Bay, that wide receiver room reminds me a little bit of this one where you're like, oh, Alan Lazard is our Curtis Samuel. I mean, they're very, very different players schematically, and I think Samuel's better than Lazard, but it's a similar type thing where you're going in with a guy who's probably best as like a wide receiver three, who is as your wide receiver one, and then some other young guys who you're hoping just kind of take
Christian
that
next Watson.
Game. Christian Watson could be your Keon Coleman, and it's, I'm not trying to.
I want him on the Jets so bad, man.
Maybe Khalil Shakir is your Romeo Doubs. Doubs. Like, I think you can make that comparison as well. So I think there's some shades of that, but you're really just hoping that Josh Allen can put the team on his back and see how far he can take them. And he's a great quarterback. He's a top two quarterback in the NFL, so maybe he could do it, but that receiver room is bad, and I think that's a major concern.
If you had to say right now who wins the division.
I can't pick the Jets. I just can't do it because I just mentally, I will feel bad if I pick them and they don't win it. So I can't do that. So I'll say the Bills because I trust the Bills more than I trust the Dolphins. But on paper, the Jets have the best roster in the AFC East. And we got a comment here on YouTube saying that the Jets are the best team in the AFC East right now. So that Jet Up Bleeding Green podcast. I on paper, I agree with you. I just haven't seen it from this Jets team. And I can't in good conscience pick them. I just can't do it. But I think on paper, the Jets are the best roster in the AFC East.
See, I just feel like September and October Miami might be the best team in the league.
Yes.
So because of that, I just feel like they're going to get off to such – and again, Tyreek Hill is going to still be insanely good, and Jalen Waddle's probably going to be insanely good.
So you think the Dolphins win the division?
I just think they're going to bank so many wins early on. Like if the song plays the same like it did the last couple of years, they're going to start off crazy hot. Then the people are going to say, maybe this is the year Miami's a Super Bowl contender. And then now I think that this year the defense with Anthony Weaver coming into for Vic Fangio, I think the defense is better. So that will guard against collapses. But I also feel like that like it's just too good. Like what? Well, who do you double? You can't double anybody. You can barely single cover guys because they're too fast.
DJ Reed's a really good corner. He was getting burnt against Miami last year.
That was the worst game I've seen him play as a Jet.
Right.
And it wasn't anything complicated. There was run among go routes, and DJ Reed's fast.
Right. But Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill are, I mean, two of the fast guys in the league. It's just, it's so tough.
And again, Sauce did okay against him, but like it was one of his worst games of the year. Like he was still good, but not like Sauce level.
I mean, if he has Dolphins fans, he got absolutely torched. But
yeah, but what did he give up? Like three catches for like 30-something yards or something?
Catch to Jalen Waddle for 30 yards. And as a result, now Dolphins fans since that game have called him Waddle's son when he allowed one catch to Jalen Waddle all game.
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened about the other 70 snaps? Anything?
Right, okay. That's the bar, though. That's the bar for Sauce. One catch?
You can't even allow a catch. It's crazy. Because no other – like Champ Bailey was cool when he was – didn't Champ Bailey allow like four catches one year or something like that? Like that was cool.
I don't know. That seems insane. Probably not a lot.
Go look it up in 2006, I think it was. He was with the Broncos.
There's no way it's four catches.
It was something crazy like that. I don't know. It was in the single digits.
Well, the first thing I see is a Reddit post that says the 35 target four catch allowed has been debunked a bunch.
Okay, well,
that's Reddit. Take it for what it's worth, but
it was still really. I think he had 10 picks that year. He was still
Rebus in 09 is another example. Even that, you know, you're allowing more than you're allowing some catches. It happens. You're a corner, like it's
gonna I remember I was watching like an old NFL films thing. It was like one of like those top 10-y kind of shows, and they were talking about the Browns in the 80s because they had Hanford Dixon and Frank Minifield, who at the time were like probably the third and fourth best cornerbacks in the league, and they had them both on the same team. I think they both made three Pro Bowls in a row together. And one guy was like, in 1987, only seven passes were thrown at Hanford Dixon. And I'm like, there's no way. There's no possible way. That's just not true.
No. That's the other thing. Stat keeping, especially with coverage stats, was so bad. Like, they won it. It was non-existent for a long time. And then even when it started to become a thing, like, it's not reliable. Like, yeah, that's like the Champ Bailey. Like, I'm sure that just was a rumor that spread around. There's no way that's a reliable stat.
It's probably still low, but probably not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Champ Bailey is great. He's a Hall of Famer.
Let's move on to our last segment, which is bold predictions. We got a couple. We got like two or three each, I know. So we want to go, and this could be about training camp, about the season in general. I'm going to go and kick the festivities off.
Go for it, man.
But I'm going to do it by reusing a prediction from last year, but I think it holds true because I really don't think that my prediction got a fair shake after we all know what happened.
Sure.
This year, Garrett Wilson will lead the AFC in receiving yards.
All right, let's go.
Last year, honestly, I thought maybe part of last year was a fluke. Like maybe part of the rookie year was a fluke because we've seen that before.
Sure.
Crazy rookie year doesn't replicate it. I'm like, all right, let's see you do it again. Rodgers got hurt. Now I'm like, all right, now we really got to see how good this guy is. 1,000 yards again with the most deplorable, gut-wrenching, I don't even want to talk about it, level of quarterback play. Remember that one year Randy Moss went to the Raiders and he had like 500 yards in a whole season in 2006?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Even the best of the best can have years like that, where quarterback play just hurts you. Not Garrett Wilson. 1,000 yards. Our whole offensive game plan is run to Breece Hall, check down to Breece Hall, throw to Garrett Wilson. 7-8 catches every single game. It was ridiculous. And now you get Aaron Rodgers, and now you get Mike Williams beside you to take away some of that coverage. He's going to be up there with Tyreek. I think by the end of the year, we'll be talking about Garrett Wilson as the top 5 receiver in the league.
I love that take. I don't think that that's a hot take at all. The fact that Garrett Wilson has been able to do what he's done over the first 2 years of his career with the quarterback play he's had is ridiculous. I was just writing up an article about him a few days ago, and I found, what was the stat? So it was of the 273 wide receivers drafted between 2015 and 2022, only eight have had 1,000-yard seasons in their first 2 years in the NFL. And of all those eight guys, like almost every single one of them was like, great quarterback, great quarterback, great quarterback, great quarterback. And then it's just Garrett Wilson, where it's like, how did he possibly do this with the quarterback play he's had? I mean, we're talking about guys like Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Michael Thomas, Amari Cooper. Like, I mean, I guess outside of maybe Kobe Cooper had good quarterback play. Derek, I mean, actually, when Cooper was a rookie and stuff, and Derek Carr was cooking, like, he was very good then. So every one of those guys had really good quarterback play. And then there's Garrett Wilson, who's had, I think it's eight different quarterbacks play with him.
Rodgers, barely, but Zach Wilson.
Yep.
Chris Trevler, remember that?
Yes.
Mike White. Yep. Joe Flacco.
Yep.
Tim Boyle, Trevor Siemian.
And maybe it's just seven?
Did I say Zach Wilson?
You said Zach Wilson.
Seven or eight. But still.
Seven or eight. Seven over 2 years. That's insane. That's ridiculous.
Most guys get one in 5 years.
Right. And so
projecting 7 in 2 years.
Projecting that his numbers will be significantly better with not only a much better quarterback play, but hopefully a competent offensive line and actual receivers around him. I mean, if Mike Williams stays healthy, Garrett Wilson's not getting doubled. Garrett Wilson is not the only weapon in that offense now, especially if, you know, Malachi Corley becomes something or whoever, right? So I don't think that's a hot take at all. I don't think that's a crazy take to project that he will lead the AFC in receiving yards this year, especially if Rodgers can stay healthy. Let's see. I got a couple. Should I go like positive first or like neutral? Neutral to negative.
I'm not a cop. You pick.
Okay. You've said that. I think that's your go-to response now. All right. This is kind of neutral to maybe negative. It's neutral. It should be neutral. I think Xavier Gibson will be the Jets starting slot receiver for most of 2024, if not all of 2024.
Ahead of Malachi Corley.
And I see how that can be taken as like a negative thing. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm down on Malachi Corley. I think it's two things. I think one, the Jets are expecting a pretty decent leap from Xavier Gibson this year. He was one of the biggest standouts in the spring. Obviously, we're not going to take too much away from OTAs and minicamp, but Gibson was making more plays than any wide receiver not named Garrett Wilson. Malachi Corley, Malachi Corley, meanwhile, I don't know why that was a tongue twister for me. Missed some time.
Wow.
Missed some time. Didn't really do much when he was given the opportunity. Of course, Mal Corley is something I'm going to say his whole name now.
No, you're going to get that. You're going to learn this. What's his name, Justin?
Malachi Corley. It's in my head now. He's someone who is definitely going to be better suited for an environment where there's pads, where he can show off his dynamic yak ability and he can break some tackles. So I'm not shocked that he wasn't lighting it up in the spring. But I do think going into the summer, Xavier Gibson's ahead of him on the depth chart. And Corley's going to have to beat him out and earn that starting slot receiver job. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do it, at least not right away. I think Corley is someone that the Jets will try to work into the offense and get him some reps out there, but I'm not expecting a huge rookie season from him, and I don't expect him to be the Jets' number three wide receiver for most of the year.
I'm going to go with another optimistic offensive prediction.
Okay.
Lean to another star, Breece Hall.
All right.
He'll join a select fraternity of players to have 1,000 rushing and receiving yards.
Wow.
In the same season. Well, because last year, I know that was out of necessity that Hall became the receiver that he ended up becoming. Like, they didn't go into the year planning to give him 8 catches a game. But after discovering how good he was there, I don't see how they just eliminate that as part of their game plan. Because he was that good. Again, Mike Williams has the injury problems. You got to worry about that. You then have a guy in Braylon Allen, who I think is a very limited player in a good way. Like, he's a good player, but Braylon Allen's going to be a power back. He's not going to be a receiving threat.
Yeah.
If he is, he'll be a good starting running back, but that's not what he's going to be during his rookie year, which is fine. I think they're going to ride Hall until the freaking wheels fall off.
Yeah.
Which is good because he's really good. I know people took objection to that list somehow where ESPN had him ranked they had him ranked 2 and then people were like, he's actually 9. I'm like, oh,
that was like a poll of like NFL execs, coaches from around the league. Like that was not like ESPN's writer's opinion. You know, that was a poll of people around the league.
What's that old, I think it's like a King of the Hill meme where they're like, those kids could read. They'd be very upset.
Yeah.
That's what.
Yeah.
I'm like, read the article. But yeah, I think Breece Hall is going to be on that level. Like if everything goes right, why can't he? And he's producing with Hackett and a terrible line. Now he's got a good line and less Hackett and more Rodgers,
yep.
Which will help you get more yards just inherently.
Yeah. You're not the only one that's saying that too. Michael in chat here from Facebook said that Breece Hall will be in the running for league MVP, 2,000 total yards. MVP be a lot. If he gets 2,000 yards, having a running back win MVP, if Christian McCaffrey didn't, you know, win MVP last year when there was no real, you know, front runner, no real runaway favorite, it's going to be real tough for a running back to win MVP in today's day and age. But yeah, I think it's absolutely possible that he could get the 2,000 yards. Also, had a little spotlight go out on Breece Hall in an article I wrote recently. So Breece Hall, as we know, he ranked 4th in the NFL in scrimmage yards, behind only Christian McCaffrey, CeeDee Lamb, and Tyreek Hill. Those three players all played on offenses that ranked top 5 in the NFL in yards per game, or in total yards, right? The Jets ranked 31st out of 32 teams, and Breece Hall was still top 4 in scrimmage yards. Breece Hall, I did the math. He accounted for 35% of the Jets' offensive yards in 2023. That's
how much is Garrett Wilson, too?
He had to be right up there, too. I can't imagine there's another player in the NFL. In fact, I would guarantee that there's not another player in the NFL who accounted for that high of a percentage of their team's yards, because only 3 guys in the league even had more yards than Hall, and all 3 of them played on top 5 offenses. Hall played on the 31st best offense. So you're telling me, mind you, he did that less than 12 months after tearing his ACL. It was the single best season by, I would say, a player, a football player, at the very least a running back, coming off an ACL injury since Adrian Peterson's MVP year when he was coming off that ACL injury. It's the best season we've seen from a running back coming off an ACL injury. And you're telling me this man was not even a comeback player to your finalist? Get the fuck out of here. That pissed me off. I'm so sorry. That pissed me off so much. It's so dumb.
Well,
it's
you knew he wasn't going to win because of
I don't care. He wasn't even a top 5 finalist, Mike. He had the best season of any player coming off an ACL injury since Adrian Peterson's MVP year, where he went for 2,000 yards. This man was top 4 in scrimmage yards in the league on the 31st best offense, and he was not a top 5 finalist in comeback player of the year? That's insanity. That's okay.
How do you really feel?
I don't know if I fully ranted about that on the show, but it made me so mad. We know why. It's because he was on the Jets and he was on a terrible offense and they didn't get respect because, you know, whatever. But yeah, and DeMar didn't win it. And Brian points out, DeMar didn't even win it. If DeMar Hamlin won it, fine. You can't argue that, in my opinion. Like, you can't argue.
Yeah, I literally was knocking on heaven's door. Like, right. Literally, he almost died.
I don't care that he did nothing last year, that he barely played. You can't argue that. Joe Flacco? Winning that over Breece, what? Joe Flacco came back from being old. What are we doing? Like, what are we doing here? It's so dumb. Anyway, all right, that's a rant that I could have had 6 months ago, 5 months ago, whatever. But anyway, all that is to say, I agree with you, Mike. I think Breece Hall this year, I wouldn't be stunned if we're talking about him as the best running back in football, like over Christian McCaffrey. I would not be stunned at all. And I think he's going to solidify himself. I mean, he should already be there as a top 2 or 3 running back in the league. I think you could very, very easily make the case that he's the second best running back in the league, but I think it's going to be, by the end of the year, it's going to be indisputable that he is at that level.
Didn't you have one more about
I have a few. What was that?
Like a guy who's deep on the depth chart.
Well, I have a few. Okay. I have a few, right? I have a few here. I wouldn't be opposed to running, because I know we might be running a little over. I wouldn't be opposed to spewing out a few more of these in a couple weeks when we're back if we need some more things to talk about. Because I'm not going to say, all right, I'll say the one that you're referring to, Mike. We don't have to talk about it. We don't have to analyze it. Don't hate me. Jets fans, don't hate me. My prediction.
It's always a good way to preface a statement when you go, don't hate me before it. But
I'll end it with a good one. I'll end it with a positive one, okay? one of my predictions is that Jordan Travis will start multiple games for the Jets this year. Okay? Look. I don't want that to happen. And I'm not like out here trying to predict injuries or whatever. I'm just saying that Aaron Rodgers coming off an Achilles injury at 40, soon to be 41 years old, I would be surprised if he played 17 games. I would be surprised. I'd be pleasantly surprised. I'd be thrilled, but I'd be surprised.
And you'd be surprised if Tyrod Taylor
has also had a history of injuries throughout his career. I mean, he got hurt last year with the Giants. He's got hurt with the Chargers. Like, there's a lot of injury history with him as well. I wouldn't be stunned, especially when you combine that with just my Jets brain being like, you know, the paradox of whatever, you know, can go wrong will go wrong. I wouldn't be shocked if Jordan Travis starts multiple games for the Jets this year. That's just what I'm saying. I don't want that to happen. I don't want it to happen, but I'm just going to throw that out there and predict it. All right. But that's not that. You wanted me to say that one. I wasn't going to say that. I'll say a good one, and that is my prediction. Joe Tippmann will be the best offensive lineman in the Jets roster by the end of the 2024 season.
Ahead of
Elijah Vera.
Those are fighting words.
And that's I'm projecting a big leap for Joe Tippmann. I don't know what you want to. I don't want to turn this into a negative thing, but I don't know if Tyron Smith could be as good as he was last year. I don't know if he's gonna be second team All Pro caliber, and maybe he'll get hurt too. Like, I don't know. I don't want to turn this into a negative thing. I'm more talking about the leap that I think Joe Tippmann is going to take. I thought that he showed very, very encouraging strides as the year went on, and this is a guy who did not run with the first team offense for most of the summer, for pretty much any of the summer, was being tossed around between center and guard in the summer. And then when he first got in the starting lineup, was playing guard, then had to move to center. He was playing with Xavier Newman alongside him. I mean, the dude, friend of the show, Xavier Newman, not a shot at Xavier Newman. He was playing with guys who the bigger point is guys who had just been signed off the practice squad, who he had never played with. I mean, Jake Hansen, who were Chris Glazer. I mean, guys like that were playing alongside Joe Tippmann. And so the fact that I think by the end of the year, he might have been probably the best offensive lineman that was healthy still on the team. I think it's a testament to the strides that he showed throughout the year. And now having another year of growth and hopefully a more stable offensive line alongside him. And I think even more importantly, or not more importantly, but very important as well, Aaron Rodgers is his quarterback now. He doesn't, and that's a huge difference for a center when you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers back there versus when you have a guy like Zach Wilson or Tim Boyle or whoever. That is a massive, massive, massive difference for just the offensive line in general and specifically for the center position. So I think all of that combined, I'm expecting a big leap out of Joe Tippmann this year. And sure, I'll say, I think at the very least, I think he'll be better than Elijah Vera Tucker by the end of the year. I like Elijah Vera Tucker. I think Elijah Vera Tucker is very good. I think some fans have overrated him a little bit. I don't think he's Pro Bowl, All-Pro level, like a lot of fans have said. He's a very good starter, and when he's been healthy, he's been very good, and that's another guy who I would love to just see not get moved around, and so we can see exactly how good he is. But I think Joe Tippmann is going to take that leap this year. He's going to be the best. I'll say it. I think he's going to be the best offensive lineman on the Jets roster by the end of 2024.
I don't hate it with that justification. So yeah. With that, we're going to wrap up here. Thank you for joining us wherever you did on Facebook, on social media, the audio side, the video side over on YouTube. Thank you. You can always subscribe to us on YouTube. We are there. You can download us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. We are there. So Justin, as we prepare for a 1 week summer hiatus, how are we feeling?
I'm feeling good. Hey, look, dude, while you're going to be in Alaska, I'm going to be in Maine because I'm also going away the next weekend. So we're going to be on like
a complete opposite ends of the country.
We are going on such a break that we want to get as far away from each other as possible. I don't even want to be in the near vicinity. I want to be like five time zones away from you.
I'm going to be in like Dubai at some point. To like, what's the longest point away from Justin?
I think it's China. I think China is like the exact opposite side of the globe. So
how do you know that?
I don't know. Well, you never heard the thing where it's like, remember when you were a kid and you'd be like digging a hole? This might be a me example, but maybe this is a shared experience.
Well, you mean the thing people – you can't dig a hole in China?
Like, well, that's the thing. You ever heard like, oh, you're going to dig a hole in China? Obviously, you can't do that, but you never heard that? Like,
I mean, I heard it, but I never like – I didn't like have to be told it wasn't real. I was like, well, you obviously wasn't can't real, do that.
But I think – all right, I'm basing my information on China being on the opposite side of the world of this, the U.S. from that, just so you know. So
this isn't like based in any theory. This is based in stuff you heard when you were six.
It makes sense. Like it seems legit. Like that seems like about the opposite side of the world. I don't know. I don't know, man. Hopefully, Did Greg Berhalter get fired? I hope he did.
And then they're going to hire another guy who's Greg Berhalter. They're probably going to hire Pat Noonan, who's Cincinnati's coach now.
They'll hire somebody hopefully better. I can't even say better because I have no faith in the U.S. Soccer Federation, but that's another conversation for another day. This is not that kind of football podcast. Until 2 weeks from now, Mike, I hope you enjoy your trip in Alaska. Enjoy that. I will hopefully enjoy my trip in Maine. And for all of you beautiful people watching or listening at home, thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at Justin T. Freed. Follow Jet Press on Jet Press. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, except not next Wednesday. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks when Jets training camp is here.
I'll be sure to let you guys know how Alaska went.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.